Hi, my name is Dawn Hamline. I'm happy to have you here today for this discussion on CARF accreditation for assistive technology. I have 25 years of clinical experience ranging from Veterans Administration to the private sector and everything from neuro to ortho. Currently, I practice as an occupational therapist and assistive technology professional in rehabilitation therapies at the University of Vermont Medical Center, serving primarily an outpatient population. So today we're going to talk about the process of seeking CARF accreditation, specifically in the area of assistive technology. I do need to put out a disclaimer. I do not work for CARF, and I am not partnering with CARF in any way. I am just sharing information to support the quality and growth of assistive technology service programs. So first, we'll briefly talk about accreditation organizations. I will cover some survey preparation and standards. And lastly, I'll leave you with some suggestions and resources to move forward. So what is accreditation and who does it? Accreditation is actually a process of review. It's a way to show that you are meeting some predetermined standards. Think of accreditation organizations as external peer auditors. There are multiple accrediting bodies, each with their own focus. Some focus on hospitals, others behavioral health, ambulatory surgical centers, drug treatment centers. They're all different. It's like alphabet soup there across the screen, and there are many, many more. What's important is that you need to find an accrediting body that is a right fit for you and the services that your organization provides. So that's why today we're focusing on CARF, the Commission on Accreditation of Rehabilitation Facilities. They uniquely offer accreditation in assistive technology. So why are you doing this? People have a choice of where they go for care. Accreditation is one way of showing quality, and CARF is considered the gold standard for rehabilitation facilities. Accreditation is voluntary, but more often it is viewed as essential. There are a few reasons for this. In some cases, it's necessary for CMS reimbursement. It always helps organizations develop an infrastructure for quality and safety and continuous improvement. And accreditation also provides a benchmark for measuring quality. It lets people in your community know that the services you provide meet the highest of standards. There are two options when considering a CARF survey. You can do a standalone, which is very focused. It is one single program, and it all comes out of one service manual. Or you can do a blended. Blended is a much broader survey, and so you can include more than one program from more than one standards manual. CARF does have 7 different standards manuals. There's one for child and youth, vision rehab, opioid treatment, medical rehab, behavioral health, aging services, and employment and community services. Assistive technology falls under the employment and community service manual. One thing to know about doing a blended survey, when you get your results, your survey result will be based on the weakest program. So keep that in mind if you're pulling more than one together. there are a few different outcomes to expect. One would be a three-year accreditation. This indicates that you are meeting or exceeding all of CARF standards and won't be reviewed for another 3 years. Yay! There's a one-year accreditation. They give this one if there are a few existing deficiencies, but that there's clear commitment that you're working towards correcting those and making progress. Provisional accreditation usually is because they're showing a few deficiencies, and you have a shorter time frame to get those met, or risk of receiving a non-accreditation. And then the other is non-accreditation. We won't say that one too loud. So the process. What happens is CARF outlines standards, and then they send surveyors in that check to see if you are in compliance with those standards. These standards that we talk about have been developed with input from providers, consumers, payers, and other experts in your field from across the world. The survey team is comprised of industry peers. When they come, they follow more of a consultative approach. That's why CARF surveys are not surprise visits. You know well in advance when the surveyors are coming, even a specific date. So they do look at everything, and they look at everything in detail. It's very much like that audit that happens within your clinic, but just on a much larger scale. All right. If this is your first time seeking CARF accreditation, you should allow 9 to 12 months to prepare. Part of the reason for this is you need to demonstrate to CARF that you are in compliance with the standards for a minimum of 6 months before your survey. Communication is key. You need to have a good open communication with your leadership. Your staff need to be on board and participating in this process and practicing accordingly to your policies and procedures on a day-to-day basis. You may consider creating a CARF committee. You're going to want to meet with your CARF liaison. You may want to find out if there are any pre-existing CARF survey materials or site reviews. This will save a lot of time and be helpful in the future when we talk about some of the standards. You're going to want to submit an intent. That is submitted about 3 months prior to your target survey window. When I talk survey window, it's usually about a two-month time frame that CARF tries to have somebody in there in that span. So you want to submit your intent 3 months prior to that. At that 3 months prior to survey is also about when you want to be considering a mock survey. You may do this internally, or you may bring someone from the outside in to do a survey. By doing this 3 or 4 months in advance, will give you time to make any necessary changes that you identify. All right, deadlines. Be prepared and keep track of the dates. You want to give yourself plenty of time to prepare for this survey. There's a lot of information and a lot of preparation that goes into this. You want to make sure if you're not very good with deadlines that you have someone on your team who is. If you don't and you try to rush things along, you definitely risk a rocky survey experience. All right. There are 3 ways to demonstrate conformance. There's observation, interviews, and documentation. For each standard, you want to ask yourself, how do we show that we do this? And how might we show that when a surveyor is present? You want to make sure that you actually do what you say and say what you do. So if you have policies in place, is it also in practice and not just on paper? Documentation by far is the key to the success of a survey process. You yourself need to come to enjoy documentation or at least have someone on your team who does. Huge focus on the documentation. Okay. What's in your head needs to be on paper. And when I say paper, I do not mean literally on the printed page. It can be in your computer, it can be web-based, it can be a flyer or a postcard. But whatever it is, it needs to be somewhere accessible to the surveyors. There are different ways that people going through survey organize their printed material. The system that people choose is often dependent on who's taking the primary lead for your accreditation process and what they're most comfortable with. Some find the share drive pretty difficult to navigate and not as intuitive as some people think, and they prefer a binder or a paper document method. There is no right or wrong answer. It just needs to be accessible. CARF identifies some standards that explicitly require written documentation. It also identifies other documents that are specific to operational timelines. When you look on this slide, here it identifies some of those written documents, patient records, personnel records, department procedure manuals. All of those are written with policies, procedures, job descriptions. When we talk about operational timelines, we're talking about things that need to be completed at set time intervals. For example, if you require your staff have CPR certification annually, you need to have some type of documentation that shows all of your staff did complete it, the dates that they completed it, and make sure that it follows your timeline requirement of it being annually. Same thing goes with equipment maintenance records. Different pieces of equipment need to be checked at different intervals. So having a log that equipment was done at the 3 month, 6, 9 month, whatever the periods that you have specified. Don't reinvent the wheel. This is probably one of the biggest time-saving areas that I can share with you. You want to use what's available. Often, many of the facility's policies can be used as is or with just slight modifications to be program-specific and meet your needs. Better yet is if your facility has previously completed a CARF survey, a portion of the required sections have already been done for you, leaving you time to focus more specifically on the assistive technology program requirements. So go visit your quality management office, make friends with human resources, engineering, and safety, because they'll have these resources available to you and will make your life much easier. Also, don't forget that there are other hospitals out there that have AT clinics. Use them. People like to share the information and are proud of what they've done, and use them as a guide to help you through this process. There are three general sections to the standards manual relevant for assistive technology supports and services. There's 1, 2A, and Section 4. Sections 1 and 2 may already be in place if your facility has gone through the survey before. Standards are reviewed and updated regularly, so keep in mind that this process is continuous improvement. And that being said, what you see here may not be accurate, I guess, in a month, 2-3 months down the road if changes are made. So those, the majority of the stuff will remain the same, but they may change a few standards. So the numbers and the page numbers, those kind of things may fluctuate and be different. The first section for assistive technology supports and services is Aspire to Excellence. This really refers to business practices of the organization, and you are responsible for knowing this. It's a framework that for CARF standards to make a try logical and action-oriented. So we're going to look through here quickly. A stands for accessing the environment. It's really about leadership, being aware of the environment, and helping to guide each program in achieving their mission and understanding what the needs are out there in and focusing on the people in the community who need to be served. S stands for set strategy. This is about knowing where your organization is and where it needs to go and what its plans are as it develops. It's about knowing how your AT clinic may fit in to the larger local structure. And this requires setting up strategies. P stands for person served. The people that we serve in our communities need an opportunity to provide input. Those person served could be clients, they could be stakeholders, they could be funding sources. But we don't really exist as an organization without having them and having them part of our process. I stands for implement the plan. So now that you've had input from the community and you have a strategy in place, it's time to implement your plan, and doing so in a financial and regulatory sustainable manner. R is about reviewing your results. So you've put a plan in motion, you need to assess how you're doing, having outcomes, having performance measures. And then R is about affecting change. It's about taking those measures after reviewing your plan and seeing what needs to be changed and implementing that change. This is about having a total cycle of continued quality improvement. You will be expected to know and provide access to the Aspire standards, even if you do a standalone survey. So it's important not to disregard these first two sections because they you are still responsible for them. So I think it's helpful to understand how the standards manual is written. So I took the first standard of section 2 and wrote it down here. You'll notice where it says 2A, number 1, that is the standard, and it's written to be outcome focused. The second section there is the intent. The intent identifies the way or why they think the standard is important. And then the third is learning and teaching. This is about providing examples or resources that might help support meeting that standard. So if we look at this one, the standards documents the following parameters. So that includes the patient's name and age and environment, some of the different things that we might include in an evaluation, shares information about the scope. That's about sharing information, almost like a brochure. How do people know about your program and what information is included there? And then the third part is that the scope is reviewed on an annual basis. That goes back to documenting according to timelines. The intent of this particular standard is to provide people with information so that they can make an informed choice And then if we look at the examples, it shows different areas where you might show that you are meeting that standard. The employee handbook, by having outlined what the expectations are, the orientation and intake process of evaluating a new client, different performance indicators and information, and then having that timeline checklist that the scope is reviewed on an annual basis would also be part of this. So for section one with Aspire, now we're on to section two. There are 13 standards. We just talked briefly about the first one that we used as demonstration. On these next few slides, I went through and wrote the CARF standard, followed by examples of possible ways that you may demonstrate conformance to that standard. These should all be pretty evident and built into the day-to-day operation of your organization. So hopefully many of these are not of surprise. When I use the term evidence by, I'm referring it to examples to demonstrate that conformance. These are not all-inclusive. They are just suggestions and recommendations to try to help assist in your process if you get a little hung up with the language of the standard. As we go through these standards, you want to be asking yourself, how do we demonstrate that? Or how do we demonstrate that we do this? So if we look at standard number two, provides needed resources to support the scope. How do you do that? Do you have qualified staff? If you do have qualified staff, what keeps them qualified? Do you have and offer educational opportunities? Do you do competencies? Do you do trainings? In terms of equipment, what do you do for budgeting, strategic planning for any changes that might be expected? Those are different ways to try to show conformance to that standard. Number three, based on the scope of each program, the organization documents. It wants to have documentation of your policy for entry, the criteria for transitions, as well as exit criteria. Let's see, we've got four and five here. Standard number four is, do you have a policy in place if somebody is ineligible for services? How do you do that? How do you track it? How do you notify the referral source so this doesn't continue to be a problem? They look for documentation according to that. Number five, procedures that address unanticipated service modifications, exit or transitions by funding resources. So again, you need to have some demonstration of knowledge of the funding sources, what the expectations are, and timeframes that you might be working within. So number six is looking at your process for service delivery. How do you show that you're staying current? How do you show that your staff is skilled? There's a number of different ways that you're probably doing this, but you need to think through those ways and make sure that that information is going to be available to the surveyor. You may do staff training, peer audits. Again, you may have learning modules or in-services. You want to make sure that all those things are documented and that you know where to find them when the surveyors request them. Okay, number seven is looking to see that the care team is working together and sharing information. Some of this could be written or it could be oral communication, progress notes. Sometimes if you have even in your template for an evaluation, a little spot that just says, a little bulleted spot that says team communication, that will leave a space or trigger somebody to document that they've collaborated with another discipline or have taken into account special needs that another department may be addressing, whether it be specific wheeled mobility or communication challenges that are happening in other departments. Okay. Number eight, policy for handling care of an individual who may not be of capacity. This is a policy that your facility may already have in place, but you want to have that and make that specific for your needs. Number nine relates to a mobile unit. If you have that mobile unit, you're going to have policies in place for determining who is an appropriate driver, what service providers and services are provided through this unit, how confidentiality is maintained. All of this, you should have policies and procedures around. So again, don't feel like you need to reinvent this. If you have a mobile unit, go to your leadership and try to get access to this. Ten refers to the initiation of services and making sure that there is fair access without discrimination. This too is a policy that is probably already in place. One new thing that's added and was highlighted in the standards manual is that there must be a process for handling a wait list. My guess is there's one already established within your facilities. And so have access to that, know what it is, know where to pull it up when surveyors arrive. So number 11 is about having information about your program available. This is printed brochures, handbooks, checklists, information, the way that you are communicating with the public. The thing here is it needs to be understandable. So is it written at a level to meet many different people's needs? Is it available in different languages? Is it accessible to all? Is it captioned? So number 12 is about maintaining a medical record, and these should comply with your organizational standards. And number 13 is just a policy for handling confidential information. This too should already be in place within your facility, and you should just need to be able to go out and access that. All right, this next section is assistive technology specific, okay? Their first standard is related to universal designs and knowing and understanding universal design. Basically, you want to design needs to be useful to people of all abilities and easy to understand. So you want to include different modes of communication, could language, pictures, verbal, a different way of explaining and out in your program so people can get through. Standard number 2 states that every program should have their own scope of practice statement. So you don't want to just take your overall facilities. You want to make it program specific. This is a great place to start. I apologize, I got behind here. Oh, there we go. This is a great place to start when you're developing your program. Develop that scope of practice statement. From there, you can draft your policies and procedures according to each area of assistive technology within that program. So for example, once you've designed that scope of practice, you may have a wheelchair and seating clinic, seating and positioning. You may have a driver rehab clinic. You may have an AAC clinic. And whatever those are, they may have shared the same scope of practice, but they are going to have different policies and procedures according to each. Person served is supposed to be the center of the treatment team. They need to be educated about the process of care. And how do you show that we do that? So there are some different things that you might include. You want to make sure that the person is educated about how the services are going to be delivered, what kind of timelines they might expect, as well as the end results. If we're talking about equipment, they need to understand what their responsibilities are going to be for maintenance or costs. So again, it's about allowing people to have the information to make educated decisions. Making informed decisions about knowing what's available and what will work best. So here, information is an informed decision. Lots of different ways to do it. Making sure that the equipment is the right fit for the person. Standards 4, 5, and 6, a lot of these are related to your treatment plan. You need to include desired functional outcomes achieved through the inclusion of assistive technology. This can all be achieved through a really comprehensive documentation template. So you're going to want to look at your evaluations and really see what kind of things are involved in there and make sure you've met all the criteria. All right. Standard 7 is about having that individualized treatment plan. Again, it's looking at each person individually and identifying what their needs are and why. So you want to make sure things like the environment are assessed, where the AT would be used, what potential barriers there might be, potential health risks, what previous experience with assistive technology the individual may have had. As well as what the patient's or the participant's desired outcome is. Standard 8 is looking for this process to be interdisciplinary and a team approach. So you want to have some type of documentation of coordinated care that has occurred, and often this includes staff training provided by someone from your clinic about assistive technology. Okay, standard 9. CARF wants to see that there are relationships within the community and some collaboration. So this could include relationships with Voc Rehab, maybe a peer mentoring program that you have happening currently. Maybe you provide resources to a reuse program. So those are some different ways to do it, but as you're doing it, you need to make sure that you have documentation to show that these things are happening. It could also be collaboration with an adapted sports program for equipment selection and fitting. That may sound like a one-time deal, but if you keep a documentation of that, that would also show relationships developed within the community. This is often an area or a standard where you might use some of that more non-traditional documentation, flyers, postcards, notices of things or events that are happening and that the partnership is occurring. Standard 10 identifies those timelines, and the timelines are really important. So they're critical and need to be included as performance indicators. Standard 11 is, again, looking at things having a team approach and make sure that the right professional is providing the necessary care. So, and that referrals are generated if the referral has come to the wrong place. It wants to see that there is that connection. For standard 12, CARF wants to see a comprehensive discharge plan to make sure that the client's satisfied and that there are outcomes. So we do our discharge summaries maybe in the chart, but also think about providing like an after visit summary to give the individual the education that you provided verbally in the clinic. There may be so much information that most people only leave with a portion of it. So having something that's provided is a nice way to support standard 12 and carry that information forward for the individual as they leave your clinic. Standard 13, this is about, again, people out in the community. Employers often don't have or have a limited awareness of assistive technology and workplace accommodation. There's a misconception about cost and what the impact of having that, having assistive technology in the work setting may be. So service providers who provide assistive technology do have a community responsibility as a resource to employers to help support and encourage this relationship in the community. Sometimes it's done through being on a board. Other times it's through doing different lectures in different organizations as requested. So, certain suggestions and summary for preparing for CARF. I recently had a conversation with Melissa Oliver from the Richmond VA, and congratulations to them as they were recently awarded their 3-year accreditation in assistive technology supports and services. Some of the things that they did that they found worked well for them was they went with the binder method versus using the share drive to organize all of their written documentation. So if you look here, I don't know, there might be 12, 15 different headings, and they have a binder for each one of those that holds all of the documentation to meet those that criteria. Other suggestions that she also shared was to learn and understand Aspire. I think that's one that people get very focused in their area of assistive technology and kind of feel that those first two, because they're larger, bigger business plans, don't relate to them as much, but they do. Each section that's identified, you are held equally responsible for. She says to understand efficiency and effectiveness. Allow time for that mock survey to make changes. So do that mock survey 3 to 4 months in advance of your survey date. Again, whether you do that internally or you bring someone externally in to do a mock survey, give yourself plenty of time to make changes. Develop relationships with other departments. I can't say it enough. It's going to save you a lot of time if you reach out and talk to some people in other departments who may already have policies, procedures, maintenance records, those kind of things, timelines in place that you can use and modify to meet your specific program's needs. Another thing is to reach out to other AT clinics. They are growing around the country, and it's definitely worth it. People want to support each other. It's a growing area, and I'm sure people will be happy to help support one another. A few others that I want to add is to use your local CARF liaison. You're going to be assigned a person. You may already have a CARF liaison within your hospital if you've gone through the process before. Use them to help interpret standards that might be more difficult. CARF offers training throughout the years, and so take advantage of that. Go and sit and learn on it and bring that back to your team to be able to implement. Refer to the CARF standards manual. You're going to carry that around with you and check and make sure that as you pull out a standard, you can find where you might have proof of that. Complete the survey preparation handbook. That helps give checklists and guidelines to make sure that you're getting, that you're complete with all of your work. I would also add, practice teamwork. This is not just a small group working to gain accreditation. This is about you as an entire team working forward. So work together on that. Allow time to prepare and call that CARF specialist. Remember, don't reinvent the wheel and stick to your timelines. Your program will benefit from the quality of this, and the services that you provide will be all the better for it. CARF is not just a certificate that you hang on the wall. It really is a sign of quality, and people in the community will recognize that, as well as other people within your organization. So I wish you luck, and you can do this.